Hello, I'm Jay Crowther, editor of Total Film, and welcome to Inside Total Film, the weekly podcast from the Smarter Movie Magazine. And today I've got with me Matt Matem. Hello.
Hello.
And Matthew Leyland.
Hello.
Yeah, I've got the Matt variants in the house because this week we are doing a spoiler cast of Loki. So be aware, if you haven't watched Loki to the final bit, don't listen any further. But before we get into that, we probably should talk about another little thing that's happening this week. Red carpet, French fries, the joie de vivre of Cannes Film Festival. It's actually happening in real life, guys.
Yeah, it's already happening.
I know. I mean, we're not there, sadly. Yeah. Boo-hoo, mon dieu. But people are, and people are turning out for a copy, and the films are coming, and this feels like stuff might actually come out.
I'm always jealous of when you see people at film festivals at the best of times, but now it's just like, I'm extremely jealous. Yeah, like how have people managed it at this time? But anyway, I'm glad because it does feel like some normality returning to the world.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of exciting films there, a lot of kind of, you know, intriguingly weird films. Forgive me my pronunciation, but Titane. Mm-hmm. By Julia De Corna, who made Raw. It just sounds so weird and so bonkers. Like, that's kind of one of the ones I'm most desperate to see, and try not to sort of spoil myself with all the reactions coming out of Cannes for that.
What about you, Matthew?
French Dispatch, Wes Anderson's new film. Really excited about that. That looks really cool.
Yeah, with a million different famous people.
All his signature actors in one film. Can't wait for that. It's going to be great.
I quite enjoyed Stillwater, which was the Matt Damon film about him sort of hanging out in Marseille. So it was sort of like this good combo of Hollywood within a sort of French milieu that seemed very Cannes as a film. And things like Annette, which is obviously a lot of talking about that and the weirdness of that. And as you say, I love seeing that people are back to normal, standing on that weird desk space that they have at Cannes on the red carpet, which they don't seem to have at any other awards, where people sort of lounge as if they're waiting at the Genius Bar to help you with your laptop, don't they? And it's like wearing sunglasses, lounging on that weird table.
Yeah.
Glamour.
Nice summer slacks.
Yeah, it does look nice weather there. Yeah. So yes, good luck to everybody in Cannes. We hope you're enjoying your rosé and your screenings. But for now, shall we get on to the pressing matter of Loki and where that leaves us in the MCU? Are we ready to get into it?
Yes.
Okay, let's go.
Welcome to the Time Variance Authority. I'm Miss Minutes, and it's my job to catch you up before you stand trial for your crimes. So settle in.
Now hang on just a minute.
And we'll get you in front of a judge in no time.
Okay, so Loki has finished. It's over. It's done. We are about to talk about it in detail. So if you haven't seen it yet, please stop listening or go away, watch it, and return. Use your TVA powers to go away, watch something and return to this particular timeline, because we are going to be discussing all sorts of things that happened in the show. So I think, first of all, we probably should discuss the ending. Where has that left us for the development of the MCU from here? I mean, obviously we have other feature films coming in off the back of this. Are you excited about where that might lead us?
In a way, end up being like a prologue to Phase 4, kind of setting up what we think might be the major antagonist and the major conflict of Phase 4. There's a phrase that came out, multiversal war, which seems like it is something that could unfold over future movies, especially with Doctor Strange in the Madness of the Multiverse and Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. For me, that was the most exciting development, that it kind of keyed up that was to come. And it finally revealed that Jonathan Majors is, well, he didn't say his name, but he is clearly Kang, who's a major Avengers villain in the comics. He all but said his name. So we got to see that as well. And the other big development was they announced season two at the end, which hadn't been official. That was the big end credits tease. Loki will return in season two.
Where are they going to position season two? That's the question, isn't it?
That's the thing about this ending. It really feels like it's blown everything just really wide open, where it almost, like, in some ways the shows thus far had almost trodden a bit of water, in the sense they hadn't really moved things on massively from the films. Like, as enjoyable as they had been, you know, you could almost get the sense you could carry on with the films without really missing too much having watched the shows, if that makes sense. This, it suddenly is like, whoa, that just, it just feels like everything's just completely changed now, and it's completely opened up, and in a very confusing way, I should add as well.
In a deliciously confusing way, or an annoyingly confusing way.
Both, really. Yeah, it's like deliberately confusing. So you kind of, you're going to go with it. But yeah, I'd like a bit more clarity, I think.
So yeah, other major developments obviously are the multiple Lokis.
Yes.
Which have been quite interesting and fun. Let's talk about them for a minute. How have they affected, you know, the Loki legacy, but also who's your favourite? I mean, it's got to be Richard E. Grant, hasn't it, as original Loki?
Yeah, it's a tie between Richard E. Grant and the alligator Loki.
Mm-hmm.
He was good fun. but yeah, Richard E. Grant, I mean, it kind of reminded me of in Winter Soldier, where you've got Robert Redford, who would clearly have been in the running to be a young Captain America. And similarly with Richard E. Grant, perhaps 10, 20 years ago, he would have been in the running to play Loki. So that's very nice to bring someone in who's, you know, as capable as playing that character, but at a different age. So he was a great deal of fun. He stole all his scenes virtually.
I know. It's just like, stand back. Reg is on the soundstage and he's coming and he's bringing it.
He must just simply select roles on scene stealing potential, mustn't he? That's just what he always does, doesn't he? And I just loved his costume as well. It looked like it could have come from like a really old TV show or something. You know, like if they did a 60s Loki TV show.
Yeah, with the pants, the big yellow pants.
And the sort of like, you know, not very sturdy looking helmet and horns and, you know.
A bit unwieldy.
The threadbare sort of lycra. Of the whole series, that was definitely my favourite episode. We kind of see him briefly at the end of episode 4, but then episode 5 is where you really get all those different Lokis. That to me was, just the most fun and just most out and out enjoyable episode.
He brought back the mischief as well. I felt that the mischief was lacking a bit, really. Tom Hiddleston wasn't allowed to be as mischievous as he was in the other films, because they kind of shifted him into making him the protagonist.
Yeah, and he had a mission to do, a proper mission that wasn't just about self and self-glory and sort of being a bit petulant. It's also kind of weird to see Loki doing something that is in service to other people as well, because generally we've only ever seen him entirely self-absorbed and interested in his own legacy and his own sort of world building. So I'm not sure that sat with me extremely well, because I kind of want my Loki to be that. That's what I've enjoyed in the previous films. And I also enjoy him as a foil to other people. So for me, I'm not sure I really loved seeing this much of Hiddleston's Loki. So by the time they brought in other versions of Loki, I was like, oh, this is what I want. I want him to stand alongside other big characters and be sort of in relief to them. What about female Loki, old Sylvie Loki? Are we liking her? She's obviously going to be back for season 2, we think.
Yeah, I would guess so. I wasn't so keen at first. I did warm to her as the series went on. The rapport with original Loki built up. Yeah, I thought she was good. I think she could probably carry a series on her own. I think that would be an interesting development to see.
That's one issue with this. You feel like there could be lots of spin-offs to this spin-off.
Yeah.
Because obviously, of course, we'd want like a classic Loki spin-off with Richard E. Grant, but then you could easily have an alligator Loki, like, you know, cartoon or something, you know.
Kid Loki.
Sylvie, Thor Rog, the tiny Chris Hemsworth character, which I actually missed first time round. It was such a tiny cameo, I actually missed it. One thing I wasn't sure about with Sylvie is, like Matthew, she really warmed on me and I really liked her performance as it went on. But I wasn't really completely sure about this romance element that came in between her and Loki, because I couldn't just shake the feeling there was something just a bit weird about it, as they're
like
variations
like fraternal
on the same person. Is that
so it's like brother and
related?
Sister. Yeah.
Along the way, I was thinking, is this supposed to be a romance, or is it just that they're just true best buds because they really click and they really get each other because they're obviously on exactly the same wavelength? But then when you actually had that kiss in the last episode, it just felt a bit weird to me.
Do you think it was a bit Luke and Leia?
A bit, yeah.
Kissing, it was like kissing my brother.
Also a bit of the way I felt a bit Rey and Kylo as well, that where it just didn't feel right. Just something about it felt weird.
Yeah. I kind of would have liked them to have really sort of messed with it a bit more and have, you know, Loki's first kiss be with somebody that isn't a woman. Would have been quite interesting, wouldn't it?
That was one of the big revelations. He said he likes boys and girls, but then they kind of left
but
it
then,
at that.
Yeah, and then they just went down a very, very sort of traditional role with a kiss with a girl. And it's sort of like, well, if we're really messing with everything in this show and we're really turning everything upside down, wouldn't it be nice if we actually had a same-sex kiss in this, seeing as we're sort of quite starved of that in the MCU in general, really? I sort of felt like that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, something for season 2 to pick up, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe we'll just see like Loki just, you know, shagging around in season 2.
Yeah.
It's like, now we've broken the seal on a kiss with Loki, it's going to be a parade of different lovers every week.
Oh,
I tune in for that. What are we thinking about Owen Wilson? I mean, obviously, he is a cracker and he has been amazing in this show, hasn't he? For me, he's the sort of anchor of it. Do we think there's going to be more character development for him and his character?
Well, he's left in this strange place now where, again, this is one of the things where I was, you know, confused somewhat by the end. Loki's come back after, you know, this experience with, you know, who we'll call Kang, where presumably Sylvie killed him after she sort of sent Loki back to the TVA. But obviously in a kind of Planet of the Apes style, everything's kind of changed there now. Mm-hmm. And there's these huge statues of, you know, Kang, Jonathan Majors, and Mobius and Hunter B-15 have no idea who Loki is. So are we starting from scratch with this Mobius? Is like, you know, I don't know where that's going to go. And mm-hmm. I feel like that there's going to be so much kind of untangling to do, especially once you factor in the films as well. I mean, I suppose because the TVA sort of exists outside of the timeline, maybe they'll get away with it that way. And I don't know, presumably he's going to have some way of unlocking Mobius's memories. But it was interesting because he did have a lot of development over the series, you know, when he started to realize that, you know, everyone who worked at the TVA is a variant and that he did have this past that he was, you know, couldn't remember, but he obviously wanted to. He wanted to get, you know, get back to his jet skis or whatever, you know.
So fascinating. I love the obsession with the jet ski. Yeah.
But
then now, like, what have we done? Have we just completely, you know, completely rebooted him? I don't know.
Yeah, is it just reset back, or is there going to be a point where he realizes everything and there's a huge reveal about him? You know, like, if they open up his memories of Loki, will it also open up a world of other memories that he's been suppressing or has lost? Is that going to be in store for us?
This also leads me to another, I guess, complaint about this series, which is something I find can be a bit problematic about the MCU in general. When he was pruned in episode 4, I think it was, at the end, you kind of didn't really get the set, or I personally didn't really get the sense and the feeling that he was truly gone, like partially because this pruning's like was a weird thing to do, people, because they just kind of evaporate rather than actually dying, you know. Then you just see him almost, you know, immediately again. So it's that thing that I find just problematic on a sort of dramatic level about the MCU, that you never really truly believe anyone's actually dead. So like, it's hard to really invest when a character is sort of sacrificed. You always think, oh, there's just some,
there'll be some workaround
channel that
anti-snap that can be used. Yeah,
perhaps they're going to embrace that now with the multiverse. Perhaps they are very much aware of that and they're just going to go full tilt with it, have all these variations of characters, bring back whoever they want, have multiple actors.
That's everything wide open. They can literally do whatever they want now, can't they?
Yeah.
But that's really, I mean, that's really clever in planning, isn't it? Like, when you've sort of boxed yourself in with a end game, quite literally, to then reinvent it quite literally all over again and blow the doors off it so that you can actually take it in any direction and not necessarily be predictable or what the fans might sort of glean from comics or whatever, because now anything is possible.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
But I think they're going to have their work cut out and making sure there's still feels like there's stakes as well, you know, because knowing anyone can come back. And also, this is a thing that's weird, is with Kang, I'm not a huge comics reader, but I know the kind of basics about him. You know, he's from the year 3000 and something, isn't he?
Yeah, 31st century or 30th. Yeah.
he's from far in the future.
Yeah.
And he can just travel about. He can, you know, get all this future tech. He's kind of exists at the end of time, you know, as we see in this last episode of Loki. So it almost like it kind of makes everything else feel so small in comparison. Is it going to make the stakes in something like Shang-Chi, you know, which looks like a sort of fairly contained sort of origin story? I mean, does that just make that just meaningless because it's just such a small speck of dust in this huge universe? I don't know.
Well, those are philosophical questions about life itself, aren't they? I mean, is anything worth doing? We're so tiny, we're such specks in the universe.
I think they're still quite good at, you know, keeping that urgency within individual stories. Like in Black Widow, I mean, her fate as soon as you sit down to watch that, but it's still a terrific film and still you're investing in her character, even though, you know, everything she's doing, you know, is ultimately going to lead to her doom, but still it still works in itself. So I think they've got quite a good handle on that. I mean, whether they will continue to in the future remains to be seen.
I mean, Black Widow succeeded probably because of the character, the strength of the sort of building the character and creating those strong lines between the sisters and the sort of weird dysfunctional family that made that particular journey within Black Widow's sort of world feel vital and interesting, even though, you know, that she'll ultimately, you know, jump to martyrdom as it were. Yeah. So yeah, I guess that's the task ahead for Marvel, isn't it? Making sure that each of these stories has really strong character and emotional beats within that tiny frame, within the giant sort of universe and time itself. And hopefully if they've managed to do it with Black Widow, they're going to be able to do it with Shang-Chi, they're going to be able to do it with the Eternals, they're going to be able to do... I mean, the Eternals is bananas. Mm. We don't know anything about it really, apart from the trailer so far, but that in itself sounds nuts. And, you know, trying to get that sorted in your head and how does that fit in? And they're like completely on a different plane to this. It's just fascinating how Marvel plan. And the forward planning of Marvel is astonishing, isn't it? Because everything makes sense. And it doesn't really ever feel like they've retro-managed something or reverse-engineered it. It does actually feel as though everything was intended in a godlike fashion. So,
I'd love to see Kevin Feige's spreadsheets.
I know.
Ahead he worked it all out. How much they're winging it.
Yeah, but where they're heading now just feels so, it feels so ambitious that... Even compared to like the whole, you know, Thanos storyline and that, you know, Infinity Saga leading to that, just almost feels like, just sounds really simple now. Just like,
I know. And also because that was like one, it was like one endpoint and all of these films converged into this one thing. Whereas the next phase is just like an explosion and it's all going off in different directions. Kevin maybe has a plan, but there doesn't seem to be one of those unifying things. It's more that everything has to speak to everything else. Do we have to have watched Loki to understand what's going to happen going forward in the universe?
It feels like that to me, really. Compared to the other series like WandaVision and The Falcon and Winter Soldier, I felt like with both of those, I enjoyed them. But obviously where you left Falcon, he was obviously handed Cap's shield, you know. Over the course of his series, he takes on the mantle of Captain America. So when he next appears in a film, he's going to, you know, be Captain America. But you could just get that from having watched the films. You're like, oh, he's handed the shield. And when I next see him in the film, he's going to be that. You didn't necessarily need to see him go on that journey, you know, in between. And the same for Wanda and Vision as well. Like, you basically, you know, he's died and you know that she's going to be grieving over it. But then with this, I feel like, you can't really...
You need the context in order to...
Yeah, and it feels like, in a good way, it feels like Kang's just going to be such a prominent figure in... Phase four. And that was one of the things I really liked and was really surprised about with this, because obviously he'd been reported for ages that Jonathan Majors was going to play him and that he was probably going to first appear in Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. But then when they were getting to the Citadel at the end, or not the end even, sorry, in this last episode, I kept thinking, are they actually going to reveal? Is it going to be some other bluff? Is it going to be some anti-climax?
Another Loki variant.
But then, no, it literally was him. It was like this... That felt like the first time in ages we'd had like a really, really big reveal like that. You know, you got a lot of him as well, you know, in the episode, and he kind of explained his backstory and all that kind of thing. So that was really surprising that they've really gone full on with this. Whereas obviously Thanos, we had to wait till the Avengers in 2012, we got that little glimpse of him in the mid credits. And then you got, you know, little bits of him leading up to Infinity War, really, I suppose, where he became a much more sort of leading character. But yeah, I felt they just dived straight in with him, which in a way is very exciting to me, because it had started to slightly feel like perhaps that the MCU was feeling a bit aimless, whereas it feels like you know, this is the thing that's gonna drive it forward now.
And what about Loki and Thor Love and Thunder? How do we think that Loki's gonna figure into that, if at all?
He said he's not, hasn't he?
But do we ever believe when they say this? I don't know.
Surely he will. Surely there's got to be something in there, some reference. Or to one of the other variants, Richard E. Grant will turn up, or Sophia DiMartino will pop in there somewhere. It's got to happen, hasn't it? You can't just ignore it completely.
I mean,
imagine a Thor film without Loki.
I know, because it's like that's what sort of makes Thor... amusing, that he plays off Loki and his brother is so different in every way. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they're going to do with that. Let's talk about favourite moments then in this series. What were your favourite moments?
I loved all the stuff in episode 5 with the, I think you pronounce it, Eliath, the giant kind of lion dust cloud thing that just, you know, eats anything that tries to escape from the void. And felt that to me, out of everything really in all these Disney Plus Marvel series, it just felt really kind of epic and big screen, and I just love that. And especially as you get, like, you know, classic Loki also in there building up that big Asgardian castle to distract and things like that, I love that whole episode. But yeah, that was great. I thought
I really liked Sif's appearance when you got a sort of mini Groundhog Day where she just kept coming back and back, and he was Loki kind of came to some sort of self-realization about how terrible he is and how he affects other people. I thought that was kind of quite nicely done, and sort of mini episode within an episode. And anytime they cut to a scene with Loki Alligator as well.
Yeah.
Adorable.
And what about things you didn't like? Worst bits?
I found the first episode quite draggy. Found that really unpromising and just kind of raking over Loki's history. Yeah, it did feel a bit aimless to me and a bit mopey as well. I mean, yeah, I was expecting a lot more comedy and fun and hijinks, and it felt like this was going to be quite a downbeat, sort of very introspective series. So I was a bit disappointed with that.
I quite liked the opening episode in the sense that I know it was exposition heavy, but I kind of forgave it that because of it being the first episode and setting up this kind of crazy world of the TVA. I did enjoy the first episode, but then I found like two and then especially three, I really thought three was quite a drag of an episode where they're on the planet Lamentis and they have a train journey.
Yeah,
obviously that's where you get the sort of reveal about the sexuality, but that was like the one interesting thing in the episode. And when it came to episode four and you got the previously on, I was like, that whole episode three could have just been a previously on. You know, sort of, there wasn't enough content there for me for a whole episode. That kind of left me almost that because it dragged a bit over two and three for me. Four was exciting, and then five and six I found really exciting. I couldn't shake the feeling that maybe this could have just been a longish film, that they could have just made this like a 2 hour plus film that made it just a bit leaner. To me, WandaVision's the only one that's truly felt like it really fitted the TV format, because Falcon and Winter Soldier also felt a bit like that to me as well, that it very much had the structure of like a long film, and that you feel almost like they were thinking of a film style story to tell when they thought of it, whereas
and then just split it up
whereas WandaVision, because it's so that
self-contained
and it was so much about TV as well, exactly. Wasn't it? It really embraced TV. It was such a homage,
and that weekly sitcom, you know, angle where it's going through the decades, that just, it literally felt like you wouldn't have wanted to tell that, you know, in the cinema. It felt like it was just needed to be done on TV, whereas these almost felt like, you know, they could have been films to me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think WandaVision did feel like something completely different from what we've seen so far, and was worked in a different way and made you think about it in a different way. And Falcon and Winter Soldier and Loki have just been films that are split up. The whole thing for me that I didn't really love, we sort of discussed this in the office, was the sort of binning off of, you know, cherished artifacts from the entire MCU to date in Loki, which was, it's funny. It's dead funny, you know, like, oh, I've just got a Tesseract in a drawer and some Infinity Stones rolling around with my paper clips. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, it's so sort of diminishes what's gone before and sort of like, well, what did I bother caring about that for? Why was I so upset about, you know, Thanos doing his snap if none of that was really worth anything? I get that they're sort of trying to take it onto this new level with this new baddie, and that he's even bigger and the implications are larger than Thanos. But it did just feel a little bit like, oh, have I wasted my time then up to now? Because the Infinity Stones were massive. They were huge all the way through. It's like, you know, get this Infinity Stone and this one, and then it's the gauntlet. Oh my God. And then what would happen? And then it's like, it's absolutely the worst thing that could happen. And now it turns out the worst thing that could happen to the Infinity Stones is they're rolling around in a tray in somebody's drawer, which isn't bad at all. I found it amusing, but I sort of found it a bit of a cheat.
Yeah, I guess that was always going to be the problem, because Endgame was so huge and the stakes were so massive.
Yeah.
Where do you go from there? How do you escalate it? Yeah, I guess we'll see really when this phase is done and dusted. But yeah, it's a big obstacle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Quite like the sort of fact that it was very Gilliam-esque in places, very sort of Time Bandits and Brazil. I like those kind of heightened bureaucracy and then all the kind of meddling with time. And Richard E. Grant really reminded me of the supreme being in Time Bandits, a kind of very droll villain. So I liked all those nods, the visual kind of gloom as well, and detail that felt all very Gilliam-esque.
All the brown and the orange.
Brown, yeah. Yeah.
Did you pick up on any Teletubbies references? Because
what?
The director, Kate Herron, she said when I interviewed her for our Loki cover feature, and I've seen her say elsewhere as well, that she said like Teletubbies was one of her influences. And I was kind of like
it's so diametrically different to that. Just primary coloured Teletubbies, they all live, there's like this sun with a baby's face in the sky. Where are the similarities? I don't understand. Well, did she enlighten you on exactly how that manifested itself?
No, it was kind of a throwaway comment amid listing lots of references, you know.
I mean, was Loki making custard pies? Like what? Yeah.
It was new cleaning apple. Well,
I must have missed this. I'd like to be enlightened on that. What other theories are going around about Loki then? What else do you, have you seen out there?
I think there was something about Miss Minutes being the person behind the curtain who was pulling all the strings.
They did make it briefly look like that was the case.
Yeah.
As well in episode 6.
Yeah, she went a bit sinister, didn't she? But that didn't really come to anything, but maybe in the future.
Well, all might be revealed.
This is, like I was saying, it's kind of strange in comparison to those that, like, with WandaVision, for example, people were getting so excited about, oh, like, the X-Men are going to appear in this and, you know, all things like this are going to happen. Then it all came to nothing. All these little clues ended up being nothing. Whereas this one, then suddenly they do just deliver on that big thing at the end, you know. So that was, exciting. And we haven't really mentioned this, but I really, really liked Jonathan Majors' performance as well.
Yeah.
I thought he was great, like sort of different to what I was kind of expecting from him. But I'm definitely very excited to see more of him in the MCU.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Seeing where he pops up next.
Well, I mean, surely he is. Surely he will be dotted throughout the films that we're expecting coming in now.
Yeah, a few end credits.
There's got to be, hasn't there? Yeah. Hiya, yeah. It's me. Yeah.
But what was his sign? Didn't he say, you'll see me again? That was his sign off. So there's going to be a lot more of him to come, hopefully. It's lovely to see Owen Wilson again doing a blockbustery type thing. I feel like we don't see enough of him.
Yeah, I mean,
warrant his own spin-off easily, or like a series of shorts. If they were still doing the one-shots, he'd be a prime candidate for one of those.
Yeah, you could see him as like an Agent Coulson type figure almost, that you could see him nipping in and out of the different worlds, couldn't you? So because he has been so popular, I wonder if they'll end up sort of working him into future films, you know, if that was their plan all along.
And I don't know about you, but when they sort of said Owen Wilson's going to be, it's like, he's not really an MCU person. I really didn't think... But turns out he so is. It works a treat. You know, the guy from Bottle Rocket and, you know, Starsky and Hutch is not the guy I would expect would be such a sort of attraction in an MCU, but he's so great.
Yeah. They just played really well off each other, him and Hiddleston.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah, they had lovely chemistry, I thought.
Yeah, maybe they should have kissed.
Mm-hmm. Season 2.
Yeah, let's wait for that.
So one question I actually still have relating to... multiverses and everything. As I understand it, we're in Earth 616. You know, that's this kind of main sacred timeline we've been following, you know, with all the characters we know and recognize. But something which kind of confused me a bit in this episode and just melted my brain a bit is when Sylvie said she'd been pruned before Loki was even born. And then obviously also the fact, you know, that we've got this young Loki and obviously classic Loki being sort of older as well. That really started to confuse me because I was thinking, oh, so were Sylvie and Loki not born at the same time? And then, like, how do the timelines kind of work?
Is it their variants? Because... Do they not start with the same start point?
Yeah, and are there just variants on everyone, or is there just certain special people that is Loki, you know? Because they were talking about, you know, he's kind of there, he's a survivor, and he's obviously such a quote-unquote character that there'll always be loads of different versions of him. But that sort of confused me a bit because I guess I can get my head around the fact that this Loki, obviously, that we followed through this whole series is a variant in the sense that he's, you know, broken away from that New York timeline and come away to do something different. So I can get my head around, right, he's a variant because the Avengers, you know, messed with the timeline and he got the Tesseract. So I get that. I just can't get my head around, you know, then all these others. How did Alligator Loki come into existence? Like, is there a timeline where alligators rule the world or something, you know?
And alligator Odin.
Yeah, everyone's an alligator
species. Yeah. Do you have any idea about that, Matthew? Do you have any idea?
No.
Would your kind of interpretation just be that there's always going to be some Loki somewhere in each time.
Maybe that'd be a running gag going forward. You'll get, instead of Stan Lee, you'll get a Loki.
Cool, though. I quite like that.
Played by all sorts of people and CGI.
Is Sylvie's dad Odin in her timeline? Would her dad been Odin? Well, the other Lokis do refer to Thors, so they obviously have Thors, don't they, in there?
Yeah. Didn't she say she killed Thor? Did she say that? Or that's one of them.
I think it was one of the other ones, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'd really like to see who would be the partner to original Loki as a Thor.
Oh, that's a good question.
Oh, yeah.
So if they bring Richard E. Grant back with his big pants and his horns, what kind of Thor would it be and who would it be?
Russell Crowe. Yeah, Russell Crowe would be great, yeah.
That would be amazing. Russell Crowe with a blonde going grey, long-haired wig.
Who's the other Matthew?
Luke Hemsworth. Probably, I don't know, how old is he? Is he the older
one? Not old enough.
No. I just like him.
Oh, no, you know who it should be? Sam Neill. Sam Neill is Sam Neill, long hair, graying hair, slightly quizzical.
Yeah, he'd be terrific.
But he's already been Odin, hasn't he, in the Ragnarok play within a film.
Doesn't matter. They can redo people. People can come back as different things. Yeah.
It's Gemma Chan's doing it.
Exactly.
Michelle Yeoh's done it, hasn't she? So.
Yeah. Sam Neill, that's who I want, in doing his English accent and discussing.
Erlinger would love that.
Yes, he would. Okay, so on that note, shall we draw a line under Loki and look forward to our next film, which is Shang-Chi. Can't wait for that. And
we've also got What If to look forward to as well.
Which is also going to...
head-spinning.
I know, it's also going to mess with it. With, like, what if Captain America had been a girl and other things. The zombie Captain America.
What if T'Challa became Star-Lord?
Amazing. We really do need like one of those charts that they have in like detective series where they have the pieces of like the coloured string running across the wall with various post-it notes. I think we should make one of those when we get back in the office so we know where we are with the MCU. We actually do have a reader's question before we go, which is very apt for this and came in obviously inspired by Loki. In Hollywood, who would be your variant of you?
I know it's obvious, but Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne Johnson, yeah.
Yeah.
Got everything going for him, hasn't he?
I mean, we are.
I mean, and also, frankly, when I look at you, Matthew, I think about that you can probably lift cars. You probably get up at 3 a.m. and eat steak and eggs. Can see that in you. Matt, how about you? Who's your variant?
That's a really difficult question because there's a variant that's like opposite to you or whatever. I don't know. Based on what Jane has said to me in the past, perhaps I'd have to say Henry Cavill in Batman v Superman.
I knew you were going to say that.
Matt does have a look of Henry Cavill when he has the glasses on playing Clark Kent. So,
Humbling around the office.
Yeah, so that's yours.
Jane, who would your variant be?
My Loki variant is like original Jane. So it's older Jane and it's going to be Kathleen Turner. Super cool, a brilliant actress, great at everything, kicks everyone's ass as an older woman and, you know, doesn't take any bullshit. So I think I'd like her. I think she'd be great.
We're allowed multiple variants. I also would quite like an animated variant of myself, you know, just like myself as a Pixar character or something, you know, from another timeline like that. I'd love to see.
Or like the Spider-Verse. Yeah. So you'd have like a pig version of you. I'd like a pig version of me.
1940s version.
Yeah.
Simpsons version of me.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Let us know who your variant might be by reaching us on Twitter, Facebook or Instagram. We'll be back next week with a roundup of the week's reviews. But until then, I think we'll say goodbye. Goodbye, boys.
Bye.
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 Thanks for visiting the TVA. Don't hesitate to let us know how we're doing.
Men tränar danser för sinestanser. Now singing, come hem. Men tränar danser för sinestanser. When she sings, come home. When she sings, come home. Men tränar danser för sinestanser. Now singing, come hem. Men tränar danser för sinestanser. When she sings, come home. When she sings, come home. When she sings, come home. When she sings, come home.